are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very first time tonight, a special welcome. I'm delighted that you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a really good habit to get into, and loads and loads of people around this Earth have the habit, so you're in good company. There's about 95 countries listening on any given night, and now you're here, so we're delighted. If you are new, you need to know that we have a free weekly newsletter. It went out today. That free weekly newsletter is called the K-Files E-Zine, and you can get yours by going to kevinsmithshow.com and just click on the link that you'll see there. The link says K-Files E-Zine. It's a little button. You'll see it. And just click on it and subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and we don't share our email list with anybody. As you noticed, we started off today's program with the United States National Anthem, and the reason is, of course, it is July 4th, which is our celebration of the birthday of our country. And as we celebrate the birthday of our country, I mean, a lot of things have already happened today. A lot of things have already gone on. A lot of, you know, parades and picnics and fishing trips and family outings and all kinds of things. And it's dark outside, or it's getting dark outside here and now over on the East Coast. It's already well dark. And there will be all kinds of spectacular fireworks shows. As we celebrate, and by the way, let me say to all of my fellow Americans, happy birthday, America. But as we celebrate, let's remember a very special group of people, and that would be those men and women in uniform who make freedom possible for us. The Constitution is, of course, quite important. On the other hand, it's just words unless there are people to make it happen. Now look, some of those folks are coming back from the war all injured and maimed. They need our help. And at the bottom of your screen, you can see vansforvets.org. Please go over there and make a tax-deductible donation in any amount. They appreciate it. They need it to help the veterans, and they're doing a great thing for these vets. We'll be back with my guest, Tuklo Nashoba, right after this.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
And welcome back. My guest this evening is truly an interesting individual. I've had several telephone conversations with him and exchanged email with him. He is truly an interesting individual and controversial, so I want to warn all of you who think I should protect you from controversy, I want to warn you to leave the show now, because whenever we talk about things that are out on the edge, it is controversial. However, this is one of the one of the best spoken, controversial guests that I have ever had. Tuklo Nashoba, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, can you hear me okay, Kevin?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay.
All right. I'm sorry?
I'm having to press the phone up against my ear. I'm not getting a good signal.
Well, I don't know the answer to that problem. It depends on the phone line. Sometimes we do have that. Let me adjust a few things. And those of you watching on video should take note of the fact that when I tell you that I have a lot of things to do as I do the show, I don't just sit here and just talk. The controls go from over here out of view on your screen. They come all the way around this way and come all the way over here out of sight on this side. And I have to monitor all of that. So we'll try to speak up where you can hear. Now, do you pronounce your name Tuklo or Tuklo?
It's Tuklo. It means two, and the shub is wolf, means wolf. In other words, two wolf.
So that's an American Indian or Native American name.
Yes, sir, it is.
And do you know which tribe of Native Americans your ancestry is in?
Well, my dad's a full blood. He's three quarters Choctaw and 1/8 Comanche and 1/8 Cherokee.
All right.
So that covers kind of a plethora of it. My mother's Norwegian, so she's real blonde and light complected.
Now, I know a little bit about your background, and we won't get into a lot of that because a lot of it is something that, we just won't get into it. However, let me say this much about Tuklo. His background of service to our country certainly merits us saying to you, especially on July the 4th, thank you for your service.
Well, I'm not alone in that. You did the same thing, and we've got a lot of guys and gals over in the Middle East right now making the ultimate sacrifice. And it doesn't matter if it's a just war or unjust war. They got the call to duty from their country, and they answered it. And that is the most laudable thing you can do.
Well, that is true. There are people on both sides of that issue. Some who think it's just, some who think it's unjust. But one thing we can all be thankful for is that we have these wonderful men and women in uniform who do answer the call to duty, and they do a superb job. I've been deployed with them in several missions, and I'll tell you, they're just some of the finest people in the world. They truly are.
Yes, sir, they are.
I just finished reading your book. I don't know if you are aware, I'm a speed reader. And you asked me earlier today if I'd had a chance to read the book, and I said no, I had not. And I know you were a little bit worried about that, but I have read the book. And I've got to tell you, folks, this book is called The Dark Side of the Dream. It's not his first book. It is a novel, and it brings up some of the topics that we will talk about here tonight. But it begins, I got to tell you, this thing begins in the prologue. He doesn't wait even till chapter one. This thing begins in the prologue. Now, I don't want to give away the farm here, but, if you take just this prologue and the surprise ending of the prologue, that's a movie. Just the prologue. It is. And there are several movies in this book. This is a real blockbuster, especially, folks, if you enjoy the kind of topics we talk about, which have to do with the strange and unexplained, the weird and bizarre. We talk about paranormal things, and we talk about UFOs and Bigfoot and Chupacabra. If you like that kind of thing, you are going to love The Dark Side of the Dream. Why did you write the book?
Well, I've been cognizant of many things going on societally right now and in the past for quite a while. By vocation, I'm actually a sociologist, and cop first, sociologist second. And so one of the things you do in sociology is you study social trends, social mores, the things that take place within humanity. And over the last probably 7-8 years, I've noticed this huge increase in the amount of reports on alien abductions, reports on UFO sightings, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, werewolves, ghosts. I mean, the paranormal field is just all over the place. It's dynamic. It's like it's almost a living, breathing entity. The interest in all this stuff is so great. And my first two books I wrote were basically tongue-in-cheek tales. I wrote them for kids to read, and young people, old people, whatever. They're just adventure books, and they have some of the same elements, but it's like a cartoon versus a feature-length motion picture, the difference. So I wanted to do something still tongue-in-cheek but serious and broach a lot of the subjects. And part of the book, or actually a lot of the book, reflects my attitude as to what's actually going to transpire on this planet, and that's why I wrote The Dark Side of the Dream.
All right, how much reality, how much truth is there backing up the fiction here?
Probably about half. I mean, there are things I can take people, like expeditions, which I no longer do. I spent a few years dealing with a lot of people that wanted to go see a Bigfoot, or they wanted to go see a ghost, or they wanted to see UFOs, and I would take people out, and I've had grown men break down and bawl, and I've had other grown men think it was funny. I've been called a liar, a hoaxer, everything you can think of, and it's pretty much like water rolling off a duck's back, because you know, anybody that's an investigator in a paranormal field anyway, and this includes me, they've got to be a little bit off from the mainstream population. And I have a database that's at my disposal. For years, I was curious about all these stories I'd been hearing. So I went out and I interviewed, boatloads, hundreds of people about Bigfoot, creatures in the woods, things of that nature, and almost every time I interviewed someone, I was absolutely convinced that they were telling the truth as far as they saw it. Then I tried to do the interview UFO people, and I got about two or three interviews, and I broke that off after I had this one lady absolutely demand that I make me an aluminum foil cap and wear it while I was talking to her, and that kind of crimped my interviewing those folks, you know. So, but I did a lot of research.
You have something against aluminum foil hats?
not necessarily, but it was, you had to see this lady's house. She lives down in North Texas, and I'm not going to give the location away, but she had like aluminum foil on the tops of her furniture, across the windows. She had like 10, 11 cats. She had aluminum foil vests wrapped around. The cats could hardly move due to all the tape and aluminum foil on them, you know, to keep the aliens from getting them. And I was referred to this gal by a good friend of mine that's a very serious paranormal investigator. But he had never been to see her. He had just talked to her on the phone. And I actually made a point of driving down there to see her. And it went from talking about aliens to her asking me if I was available for a date. You know, this gal was like in her 70s, and I'm happily married, and I'm a fat boy. I'm not attractive at all. So I guess she was just really lonely. And it ended up being a little bit of a...
You got out of the UFO investigation field, huh?
Yeah, right then, real quick.
Well, I know, and now this story starts off. Can I give just a few details of the prologue?
You do whatever you want to, bro. It's your show.
This story starts off with a couple of guys who, in World War II, went through basic training and then decided that the idea of going to war was not a good idea for them. So they stole their guns and took off, deserted. And they wound up down in Oklahoma in sort of, I'll say, a wilderness area. That doesn't mean a desert. It means it's kind of wild and woolly in there.
Pretty much like a jungle.
It is, actually. And so they establish a life there. And in the process of time, one of them is becoming very wealthy. under a new identity, and the other one decides that he needs to be wealthy too, so he becomes a bank robber. And he's hiding his money in a cave until one day an ogre, as it's described in the book, comes out of the cave after him, chews off one of his arms, and the guy is able to get away and goes to his friend's house and passes out. His friend sees the ogre following him and dispatches the ogre, but then there are Nazis in America, in Oklahoma. There are Nazis, and it is wild, absolutely wild. Is this ogre Bigfoot?
No, it's not. You have to understand something. You could probably, I don't know if you've ever had Stan Deo on as a guest on your program or not.
Yeah, I have.
I don't know Stan, but I admire his work. But he, Michael Cremo, a lot of these guys have done a lot of research. And I can state emphatically, I've never seen the skeletal remains of one of these giants these guys have talked about. But I know some people that have, and their veracity is unquestionable. And they have stated to me they've seen these, you know, like a femur that's as, you know, as long as from the floor up to the center of my chest. And it had been tested, and it was a human femur. And they have photographic evidence, plus they've been to the locations where these things are. All an ogre is, in my opinion, is a description of a giant from antiquity, you know. And are Bigfoot giants? Yes, they are, you know, but very little is known about them. I know a few things. I've interacted with them a lot, or interacted, rather, but the giants in the book are just that, giants. And if you look through history, whether you do it biblically, do it through different records that have been kept, a lot of people don't realize that the records that Zechariah Sitchin has been translating aren't the only records available. There are thousands of tablets that are still waiting to be translated that are in ancient Sumer cuneiform.
All right, this idea of giants then, and you say that you know some people whose veracity is unquestionable, that say that they have seen the skeletal remains of giants. That would be here in the United States, right?
Yes, sir.
You know, there's a story that's just fascinating, and you know, I've tried to find out more about it, and it's a dead end. There doesn't seem to be more information about it, but apparently out here in Arizona, back around the turn of the century, the 20th century, from the 19th to the 20th, back around the turn of that century, there was an explorer who found the skeletal remains of two giants out here. One was about 12 feet tall, one was about 15 feet tall. The story says that those were boxed up and sent to the Smithsonian Institute, and that's about where it ends. There doesn't seem to be any information on that following that. Now, what about this femur that you were talking about? Do these people have it in their possession at this time?
Well, let me back up a little bit. At the University of Oklahoma in Norman, they have a museum, and it's now called the Oklahoma Museum of Antiquities or some sort of thing. It used to be referred to as Stovall Museum back in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
And a contingent from the paleontology department at the University of Oklahoma back probably, I believe it was in the 30s, maybe 40s, after the OU became an actual university, they went over to a place called Spiro Mounds in eastern Oklahoma, and they exhumed one of the mounds. Well, since then, they've exhumed many mounds over there. But in one of the mounds, they found, 10, 12-foot tall human remains, 8-foot tall human remains. And in one of the mounds, they found this femur. Well, when they removed the remains and took them back to the University of Oklahoma in Norman, the federal government, and this, I don't know this to be a fact, it was told to me by a reliable person, reliable source, but our federal government went and retrieved all these remains they had and secreted them away someplace. I don't know where they took them, but the one thing that my associate that I know kept and has in his house is that femur. It's just I haven't made the trip up to Tulsa to look at it yet. But, yeah, he's got it in his possession.
All right, let me ask you, if you will, this may be speculation, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Why would the federal government be so keen to secret away information about giants?
Well, it's not necessarily about giants. The main reason I think that they went ahead and they took the artifacts that were removed from Spiro Mounds. Now, I have to backtrack a little bit here. There are many, many intact examples of pottery, tools, weapons, all kinds of things, and some human remains that are in that museum now. I don't know if they're on display, because what they do is they rotate what you have the ability to view and what you don't. They change stuff out to keep it interesting, because now they charge a fee to come look at it instead of it being free. But at the time this happened, when they were doing all this, and when the quote-unquote feds came in, it's my understanding the main reason that they came and took the human remains out was because there were several people at that time that were just not going to put up with anything other than a Native American being a Native American. In other words, it way predates this last fiasco they did where the Kennewick man was shown to be Caucasian, and he predated the Mongoloid type races. My ancestors came, they met the boat at Mayflower. But there were those. The thing you have to understand is that there are large groups of people on the East Coast, especially, that, and at that time, the phrase bleeding heart liberal hadn't quite been perfected yet, but there were moneyed people that took to heart some objections that some of the Native Americans had about these remains being made available. And the reason for that is that on the 8-foot tall ones anywhere, they still had pieces of flesh, and they also had red hair, shoulder length red hair. And we know now due to genetics that a lot of times when there is mummified remains, dark black hair will go ahead and turn red just because the color leaches out of it. But at that time, they didn't have that knowledge, and so there was a push by several prominent families back on the East Coast to have this thing, to keep this thing from blowing up in their faces. That's the only reason I could think of, other than the fact that our government never wants anybody to know anything. You know, maybe they'll go into a blind panic, the population will, if they find out at one time there was a race of human beings on this planet that were twice our height.
All right, we have to take a break. It's right on us. You are Native American. I am part Native American. And I want to discuss, when we come back, that issue of... is Native American preference still as it was when this event took place that we were just talking about? And if so, why? And why would they want to stand in the way of a clear view of history? We'll be back. And we are back. My guest this evening is Tuklo Nashoba. And before we went away for break, Tuklo, I broached an issue. And the issue has to do with Native Americans. Not all of them, of course, but Native American tribes standing in the way of the discovery of the actual history of the Americas. That actually was the case. That's actually what happened in the case of the Kennewick man, in that lawsuits were filed by some Native American tribes to stop scientific research on the remains of the Kennewick man. Why is it?
Well, let me shift to an earpiece real quick. My arm's giving out.
All right.
Oh, man. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, I can hear you fine.
What is the deal with that? Why would Native American tribes want to stand in the way of scientific research of the remains, for instance, with Kennewick Man, and the discovery of our actual history?
Okay, let me back up a little bit on that. Number one, out of the 366 Native American tribes in America, not one of them can archaeologically prove that this is where where their people originated. I'll give you an example. In my primary tribe, Choctaw Nation, they've been doing some research for about 3 years now, and the research is in the linguistics part of our tribal language, Chada. And they have found that Japanese and Choctaw, that roughly about a third of the words interact. They're identical, and they mean the same thing. And this has raised a lot of eyebrows, and a lot of Choctaws are up in arms about that because there's no way we could be Japanese. Well, yes, there is. When Pangaea broke up, there's nothing saying that a bunch of people came over on the portion of it that ended up being North, Central, and South America. And the need for identity is really great, but you have to look at something else with these Indian tribes too, and that is just because they're quote-unquote Native American does not mean that they all have the same viewpoint. You alluded to that a while ago. The languages are as diverse as German and Spanish. They're as diverse as their ideologies, their customs, their social mores. Everything is diverse. And they do fall into general categories as far as origin as they can trace it. But you have different people with different ideas, different societies with different ideas. Now, some are all for, scientific and truthful discovery. But others, like the ones in the Pacific Northwest, it goes way beyond just whether or not Kennewick man was Caucasian or American Indian, because if they could show that he predated the people that are in that area and show that he was Caucasian and he had no Native American blood in him, then what that does is a motion could be filed to negate their fishing rights, their hunting rights, their land rights, because they are not the indigenous people in that area. And that's what the big hullabaloo was about, with Kennewick man. And pretty much the same thing.
So it was primarily an economic issue.
Yeah, it was an economic issue. It was not a spiritual or social issue.
Well, that puts it into the realm of something I think most of us can understand. But by the time of... here's the way I see this working. Number one, we say officially that Columbus, quote, discovered America in 1492. We know that isn't true, but that's the official take. All right, so that's when Europeans officially began to visit the Americas. So the Native Americans, even if they were not indigenous, were already here, and that's good enough. You see what I'm saying? That ought to be good enough, and leave their fishing rights alone. Let them have them.
I agree. But, the world isn't a perfect place, and very little of our history is as we've been taught. I'll give you a prime example in my own bailiwick here. I can take you 5 miles south of where I live, and there's a bluff down there, and if you get a topographical or a satellite map of the place, I can show you where at one time that area was a seaport, where the ocean came all the way up here into Oklahoma. There's a place called White Mountain where you can sit on a 5-gallon bucket in anywhere you reach from that bucket. You can pick up Jurassic period fossils, big ones, little ones. It's privately owned. They don't like you going in there. They used to let you come in and do it for free, and then they started selling permission to come in. Now they don't allow anybody in there. But here's the unusual thing. On this one area, there's a bluff that I could take you to the top of, and on that bluff are some inscriptions that have been... they've been dated, and I don't know exactly how the guy dated them, but they've been there, I know, at least for 130 years because I've tracked history, but they're Phoenician and Sumerian cuneiform writing on this bluff, on this big slab of rock on the top of it. There's a place over in eastern Oklahoma, in the Kiamatis and Wichitas over there, and there's Viking runes all over that area. The rune stone, and I can't remember the exact name of the place it was found, the Hebner rune stone, actually has a little house built around it now, and it's a little museum. But they verified that it was an actual Viking runestone where the Vikings came in here and predated Columbus by a couple of hundred years, you know.
So in Oklahoma?
In Oklahoma, yes, sir. The Kiamichi River at that time had a lot higher table, and they could actually sail their longship up it and park and get out and explore.
All right. Now, does any of this, I want us to get into a discussion of Bigfoot, because you have probably had more FaceTime with Bigfoot than anybody else. When you go back to these very ancient areas, is there any indication that they ran into or knew about Bigfoot at that time?
You betcha. There's caves all over Kiamichi's, caves all over the Arbuckles, caves all over the Wichita Mountains over by Lawton. If you know where to go, you can find the caves, and you can find the cave paintings just like they've got in France. And on those cave paintings, they do indicate there's something bigger than a man covered in hair. You know, and a lot of people, there's even in far western Oklahoma, at a place called Black Mesa, they've found etchings that go back to the Phoenicians, but they've also found Native American art that does depict these giant forest dwellers, you know, these forest giants, whatever you're going to call them. But yeah, every Indian tribe has had a run-in with them. These tribes, a lot of people have a tendency to dismiss what the natives have to say about it is just being overactive imaginations and stuff. But some tribes viewed them as being gentle giants. Some tribes viewed them as being women and children stealers. Some tribes viewed them as being cannibalistic and man-killer and eaters, you know. And I did a lot of research on that, and that brought me to the conclusion after some real in-depth backwoods stuff I conducted, backwoods investigations, that not everything people are calling Sasquatch is a Bigfoot. There's all kinds of creatures out there. The thing you got to understand, and I'm going to give you a slight anecdote about this, that the average person, when they go in the woods, okay, you've been in Oklahoma a lot, and you know that it can be pretty woolly and pretty rough in a lot of the areas.
Absolutely. In the state. Absolutely.
And I mean, like right now, I could take you 2 miles from my house, and you could drink from a spring coming right out of the side of a mountain. But the problem is to get to that spring, you got to go under trees, and you can hear ticks dropping out of the trees like the rainfall trying to get to your blood. And the problem you have in a lot of the woods in this state and in elsewhere is that they're not user-friendly. So because they're not user-friendly and because most people are real civilized now, they really don't understand everything going on around them out in the forest, out in the woods. And then you can compound that by putting them out there when the sun's down. And I tell you what, it gets downright spooky out in the woods, especially if you don't have a flashlight with you at night, walking and listening to things go bump in the night.
Well, yeah, you need a gun and a bow and arrow.
Well, I'm one of those guys that I get off on that stuff. I like going in without any light source and playing with the monsters in the woods. But that's when they come out.
All right, we're only 60 seconds away. Actually, not even that. We're 20 seconds away from break. When we come back, I want to get into your FaceTime with Bigfoot or whatever that thing is that you've run into out there. And folks, get ready to strap yourself to the edge of your seat, because this is some really, really, pun not intended, hairy stuff. We'll be back right after this. We'll be right back.
feet of America. Well, Chevrolets are mighty fine, and I'm more than satisfied with mine, but the heartbeat of America is freedom. Oh, freedom is the heartbeat. Freedom is the heartbeat. Freedom is the heartbeat of America. In New York Harbor, standing tall, the one who really says it all holds a flame that's gonna burn forever. Through the darkest stormy night, that fire just keeps on burning bright, and the whole world knows it stands for freedom. Oh, freedom is a heartbeat. Freedom is a heartbeat. Let's not forget it don't come free. It's something we should never take for granted. A lot of people fought and died to keep old glory flying high, and I would gladly do the same for freedom. Oh, freedom is a heartbeat. Freedom is a heartbeat. Folks today who say the good old USA is standing on the brink of destruction. Well, I'm here to tell you they're wrong. The old girl's heart is beating strong, and she's ready any time to fight for freedom. Oh, freedom is a heartbeat. Freedom is a heartbeat. Freedom is a heartbeat.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com. Welcome back. Let me remind you of something that I said at the beginning of the show, and I think it's very important. As we celebrate this 4th of July, let's not forget a very special group of people. I'm talking about the veterans returning from this war who have been seriously injured and maimed. They stood when we asked them to, and they need us to stand with them now. And Vans for Vets is an excellent organization that does just that. What they do is they especially outfit vehicles for specific needs, for specific veterans, and then give them to them. And that helps the vet be able to return to life as normally as possible. And it's a great thing. It's a great organization, and your donations are tax deductible. On your screen, at the bottom of the screen, is the website. It is vansforvets.org. So go over and be a hero for a vet, all right? Okay, let's talk about your encounters with Bigfoot.
or whatever it is. I know you've come to think that some of these are a subspecies and maybe not the classical Bigfoot. But you have been face to face with these creatures, have you not?
A lot. And, you know, the first thing that other people that look into this phenomenon do is they start pointing fingers and call you a liar, a hoaxer, and all that, and I've never done any of that. As a matter of fact, I've made a point most of the time, almost every time that I've interacted with these things, I've had somebody with me. But then they start calling all of us. As a matter of fact, the good Lord willing, the creeks don't rise. It's coming fall. I plan on taking you on an expedition with myself and my brother and a few other guys, and let you have an experience all on your own, you know. But
I look forward to that.
Let me clarify something first before I start. I don't think that all of the man beasts are gentle. I don't think they're all mean. I don't think they're all stupid. I don't think they're all highly intelligent. To try to lump them into one category is about as foolish as a person can get. That would be like saying that all of mankind, everybody that's a human, is kind, gentle, and considerate of other people. Nothing could be further from the truth. But you also can't say that all of us are mean and want to hurt each other. That's not true either. Well, the same can be said for Sasquatch. You know, you'll have those that are in a good frame of mind, those that are evil's the only way I can describe it. Now, getting to my personal stuff, I guess the best thing to do is tell you first about the very first time I ever came in contact with one. I was, can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes.
Okay. There's a branch of my family that I have a lot of cousins, a lot of kin folks, and this particular branch, their last name is Watkins. And they had a grandmother that was just pretty much like a grandmother to me, too. And since you're getting a drink, I'm going to slurp one real quick. Hang on.
I wasn't aware you were spying me.
Well, I'm watching you. I just don't have my speakers on my computer, you know. You handsome devil, you. But anyway.
Yeah, face made for radio.
Well, you've got my picture up on your website. They can definitely tell that I'm not something pretty to look at. But anyway, getting back to my very first encounter, I guess I was about 7 years old. Granny Watkins lived in a cabin that looked like something out of a Walt Disney movie. It was built in the side of a hill in southern Oklahoma on a place called Mud Creek. And there was a natural cave. It was not a deep cave, but it was a natural cave that she and her husband built this cabin into back in the 1890s. She was an old woman, like in her 80s, 90s when this happened when I was a little kid. But she would entertain all of us little shavers by sitting in her rocking chair with her corncob pipe. She grew her own tobacco. She'd smoke tobacco. She'd read the Bible to us. And then invariably what she would do is she would start telling us stories about the Mud Creek Monster. Well, the Mud Creek Monster was 10 foot tall, according to her. It was covered in hair, looked like a gorilla but walked like a man, and it would steal her corn. She would have this corn bin out next to a shed where she dried her vegetables, and this thing would come up and it would grab food and go eat it. It would also tear stuff up around her little farm there. She is a widow, and so she'd tell stories about the Mud Creek Monster. Well, this one summer night, let me describe her cabin to you a little bit. It had a water well inside the kitchen that you could pump, pump jack, where you could pump the handle, raise it up and down, and that's how she got her water. She cooked on a wood stove and used the spring house to store her food to keep it cool. And anyway, she had on three sides of this cabin, she had kind of an elaborate setup. It was the larger orifice screen wire like they used to have instead of the finely mesh stuff we have now. It was like a cross between a screen wire and hardware cloth, but that's what she covered the sides of this porch with. It had like a 3 foot wall or 2 foot wall that came up linear uprights, and then it had this screen nailed over that to keep the mosquitoes out, because what she would do is this cabin had a breezeway between the kitchen and the rest of the cabin so that the breeze could come through, and you'd lay pallets out on this clanking porch, and that's where you'd sleep. Well, this one night, there's about 11 of us grandkids out there. I mean, we were piled up like dogs all over the place. And it was in August, and it was hot as all get up. But that night, we were sleeping out on the porch, and Granny had been telling this Mud Creek monster stories all afternoon into the evening, so we were already scared anyway to begin with. And like I said, I was about 7. Well, I have a cousin named Reba, and she had just started getting her very first period, her very first menstrual. And we were laying there that night, and I was almost asleep, and my two cousins, Larry and Joey, they were sleeping on either side of me, and they were about asleep, and all of a sudden, Reba lets out this blood-curdling scream, "Granny, the Mud Creek Monster, it's gonna get me!" And so Granny Watkins comes running out from her bedroom inside the house in her flannel nightgown, and she's got this 10-gauge Greener double-barrel shotgun, muzzle-loader. I realize you're a former police officer, former military, and you probably have a pretty good idea of what I'm talking about.
Well, I'm not former military, but I am former international police.
Well, so you know that a 10-gauge is a pretty good-sized bore on a shotgun.
Yes, it is.
And this thing was one of those deals where you rammed your powder down, then you put your shot, or your wadding, then your shot, and then more wadding, and you used a primer cap on each barrel with an old Swan hammer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you used to ignite the powder to go ahead and fire the barrels. Well, she had, I don't know what all she had loaded in this thing, but when Reba was screaming like that, the rest of us, man, I mean, we're up, and we're not going anywhere. We're frozen place. Well, about 30 yards from that porch was the corn crib. And this thing had left the corn, and it was a brightly moonlit night. And there's no way I can tell you how tall it was, because you got to remember, I was 7 years old. You know, I mean, I'm laying there just trying to keep from peeing myself. The monster I see walking toward the porch. And Granny bulls out of there, and she hits up that double-barrel Greener 10-gauge, and she lets go a barrel. Boom! And she blows a basketball-sized chunk of her screen wire out and hits this thing. It turns around, and I don't think she had anything serious in there, probably packed it with glass or thumbtacks or something. But it turns around, and it's leaving, and she says, "All on you to mess with my grandbaby," and she lets go with the other barrel and hits this thing in the backside. And the reason I know it was in the backside, because I remember distinctly at 7 years of age watching this damn thing reach around with both hands and grab his ass as he's running off into the woods after she hit him with that second barrel. Well, the next morning when the sun came up, she loaded all of us into this truck she had. It was one of those front crank Model A pickups. And we all loaded up in the back, had a slapboard siding on it and an old wood decking type planks for a bed, but she didn't have the crank, so what we had to do is the bigger boys got behind and pushed this thing so we could go down the hill, and she got it started, and we went to town in the truck.
All right, we'll have to get the rest of that story after this break. I'll tell you what, it starts at 7, and it gets curiouser and curiouser all the way through till the present time. We'll be back right after this with my guest, Tuklo Nashoba.
I've lived in a life with guns, bombs, and knives. My closest friend died right in front of my eyes. I've crawled in the mud, in the snow and the rain. I've crossed the rivers, jumped out of planes. And I would never know when I'm going home. I've finally come back to my family. The war isn't over, I'm just here on leave to make lots of memories, gather a faith, just to remember why I'm going away. But I'm going back to a place called Iraq to fight for what I believe, protecting our land and making a stand for all those who've died next to me. So I've got no other choice but to go, and I know that I'm not coming back. I'm going home. I'm a hero that's fighting for what I believe, father protecting my family. I'm a soldier who's marching through history, living on land overseas. From this place called Iraq, I'm fighting for what I believe, protecting our land and making a stand for all those who died next to me. So I've got no choice but to go, and I know that I'm not coming back, but I'm going home. I may not come back from this place called Iraq, I'll die here for what I believe, protecting our land and making a stand for all those who died next to me. And I've got no choice but to go, and I know I'm not coming back, I'm going home.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
And welcome back. My guest is Tuklo Neshoba, and we're talking about some really, really strange stuff that for some people it would be controversial. Other people, especially people who have seen these creatures, it's not controversial at all. And we've had a number of people on this show talking about having seen them. You'll remember the psychologist that we had on. He's a practicing psychologist, and he talked about he and his family having seen one of these up, I think it was up in the Northwest. Tuklo, we have a caller on the line. Do you want to take a call?
Sure.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Okay, Kevin, you're going to have to speak up real loud. You're way down
there.
Yeah, I
can't.
It's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Yeah, we got that.
question for you first, Kev. When is the 800 number going to be coming back?
When we get enough support to pay the bills.
I see. And
by the way, I get email that says I don't like it when you play commercials. And then I get email that says I don't like it when you ask for donations. And I guess they expect that I can just pay for this out of my pocket and take food off of my family's table.
Absolutely not. You need that those commercials. You need them, you know, especially to pay for the show.
I need more. I'm going to get more.
Mm-hmm. And Tuklo, I heard a theory once that the Bigfoot or Sasquatch are actually the evolution of the ancient Neanderthals, that the Neanderthals didn't actually die out, they just evolved into what we know as Bigfoot. What is your thought on that theory? And I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you.
I can barely hear him. Would you repeat his question real quick?
Yeah. What about the theory that what we call Bigfoot are actually the just the Neanderthals having evolved?
Well, first of all, Neanderthalus was about 5.5 feet tall. They weren't huge like a Bigfoot is. I don't think they're the same creature. I have a friend named Lloyd Pye that has been out and researched with me, and he's got that pretty well covered. I don't agree with everything Lloyd postulates, and he sure doesn't agree with everything I do. However, as I said earlier, there are many different creatures out there, not just one type. And that's what I've seen, things that look kind of like alley-oop from the alley-oop cartoon, you know, you'd read in the comics. I've seen completely hair-covered creatures. I've seen for want of a better word, a bipedal gorilla with longer legs. And the thing is, I absolutely do not know for sure 100% what any of those things are. I know they're real because I've been up really close to them. I've even been injured a couple of times by one that broke my scapula. My right scapula hit me with a rock about the size of a softball. And, you know, so I mean, I've had some fairly serious run-ins with them. I've also had them play tricks. I've had them leave gifts. I've had them do a number of different things, and to try to categorize them all as one certain thing, I can't and won't do that.
All right. Now, how close have you been?
I've been as close as one man standing a couple of feet from the other having a conversation.
Were you frightened?
I will put it this way. I needed a change of underwear when I got back home.
I think that answers the question.
I'm going to be the last person in the world to stand here and say, oh, fuck my chest, and say, oh, I'm the big he-man, you know, monster hunting. You betcha it's scary. There's no way. I mean, I had one that I got a pretty good photograph of. My publisher, Dallas Tanner, has a copy of it someplace. If I can get it to somebody that has a good cleanup program, it'd probably be a $1 million picture. It's one we called Albert. It was on some property I had up on a bluff, and I was probably about 20 yards, and I had one of those Advantix foolproof cameras, and believe you me, Kevin, I am not a photographer at all. I'm horrible with a camera. I can do a lot of things, but that's not one of them. My brother out there where you live, he's an excellent videographer, excellent photographer, and he's moving out here, and we plan on going on a lot of adventures together. But this one creature was up on this bluff. I had my 357 out in my left hand, and I was taking pictures with the camera with the right hand, and this camera had a really fast rewind on it, and between the time I got two blurry pictures and was ready for the third one, he was already down the bluff and up a creek, and I kept covering him with the camera, kept shooting film, and I walked right off this bluff, and I fell about 11 feet and landed on both my knees, and had some severe knee damage from it. But that was to give you an idea that not only was I fascinated, I was terrified while I was sitting there trying to get pictures of this thing. And this was in broad daylight. It was not at night.
All right, let's go back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Paul from New York City.
Yeah, Paul.
I was just curious. The previous caller kind of said what I wanted to say, but my opinion on these is that they're hominoids. They're that evolved from Australian Pleistocenes. And I believe there's four kinds of hominoids now on the Earth right now. You have the skunk ape in Florida, and Sasquatch, and Bigfoot. I don't know if they're the same, and the abominable snowman. And does your guest believe that they evolved from the Australopithecines, or that they, I know he mentioned something about Sitchin, or that are they part human in any way, or do they look...
okay, well, let's give him a chance to answer.
Sure.
What about that, Tuklo? Are these things part human in any way?
I think some might possibly be. I need to clarify something to your caller. His opinion is just as good as mine or anybody else's. Nobody really knows what we're dealing with. So if he's got a theory, hey, he's got just as much right to profess his theory as I do or anybody else. Now, about their being part human, let me clarify that. There are many instances. At one time in my office here in the Arbuckles, I had a wall that was completely covered with maps. And on those maps, I had denotation of different instances that I investigated and friends of mine investigated of where different people had been abducted or kidnapped or had an interaction with these things. Well, roughly about 20% of those designated areas had to do with females being kidnapped. And
I'm sorry, they had to do with what?
With human females being kidnapped, reported being kidnapped by these things.
Yeah.
You know, not everything makes the newspapers. There are stories of a female named Zana in the old Soviet Union that was offspring of half human, or she was an offspring of Sasquatch, a wild woman that an Almasti that they found and brought in and subjugated her to captivity, and she had babies, you know, that the village men would rape her, you know, and Zana very many times would, when she'd have a child, she would take it down to the river and try to wash it off in ice cold water, and the baby would die because it was half human. Well, the reality of the situation is there is no such thing as half human. It's genetically impossible. You cannot breed a human being to any other living organism and have offspring. It's kind of like, you know, mules and horses. It doesn't work. But I believe that some are, you know, an ancient or pre-human type individual that has the same genomes that we do, genetic makeup. It's just they're bigger and have hypertrichosis, which means they're covered in hair. And I think there are those that are of that nature, and yes, they are human. But I've also seen things with a snout that the best way I can describe it is they look like a werewolf.
You've seen these?
Yes, sir, I have. As a matter of fact, I've got other people that have seen these. One of the things, my brother lives out in Arizona, will tell you when you talk to him, is one night we were driving down the road. To get to my home in the Arbuckles, you have to drive for 11 miles on a really twisty, turny, narrow road that has trees and all kinds of stuff on both sides of the road. And in this one location, I came around a curve, and I nearly hit a juvenile werewolf. And Sean was sitting in the other side in the front seat. His wife was in the back, and he said, "That was a werewolf." And I said, "Yeah, that's what it was." You know, and the only way I can describe this particular thing, it was a juvenile or an extra small one, but it had, like, hands, feet, covered in hair, stooped over eating roadkill, and it had a snout with a human-type head. And
yes, I'm sorry, it had a what?
A snout, like an abbreviated, like a pug-nosed dog.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the thing is, it had like a, the best way I can describe what it looked like, only hairier, is if you've ever seen the Vampire versus Werewolf movie. I can't remember the name of it, but Underworld.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen the film Underworld, a little less hostile in appearance
but it looks a lot like the Lycan in that film, only hairier.
I want to come back to that. Let's take this call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Atlanta.
Okay, Trey.
Yeah, Kevin. Thank you for your guest being on tonight. I was going to pronounce your name wrong, so that's why I said your guest.
It's Tucklow.
Tucklow, okay. Tucklow, be careful out there. And Kevin, that's probably not a bad idea. You probably should have broadcast live from a Bigfoot hunting expedition instead of Thailand. So. You know.
Oh, no, we're going to do it all, man. There is no instead of Thailand. I have family there.
Okay, well, then that's out of the question, then.
That's right.
Look, I wanted to ask your guest, there's so many questions. I know they all, do they all smell bad? That's a stupid question. Have you ever been scared for your life? I mean, I know... We have this natural thing that kicks off whenever we're not the dominant species in the room, so to speak. But have you ever thought to yourself, this thing is coming at me aggressively, and I'm doomed?
Okay, yes, I have been in that position before. Every time I've been in that position, let me back up a little bit. When I go researching or when I go hunting these things, I don't hunt them to kill them. I hunt them to get information. Yes, I'm always armed, but I've always got my firearms up underneath the vest where they're not visible. And but invariably, the times that I've had a bad reaction, I've had some macho idiot with me that's tagging along an AK-47, you know, and wanting to play Rambo. And I've had some really hairy instances that have taken place because of that. But there's a rule of etiquette in the woods that you have to observe and to get along in there. And if you don't observe it, everything in there has a right to kill you. And what I mean by that is you're going into something else's living room. And in Oklahoma, you've got cougar, you've got bear, you've got jaguarundas, you've got big black panther looking things.
What is a jaguarunda?
Okay, jaguarunda is a South or Central American large cat that the Oklahoma Wildlife Federation did not admit existed until 2 years ago. And there's just been too many of them photographed, too many of them seen. But they're about a cross between a... In size, they're a cross between a bobcat and an African lion. They're right in there someplace, weigh about 100 pounds.
I have never heard of them. I learned something new tonight. That's the first I've heard of them.
Well, they're not real plentiful, but they are, especially in the southern part of the state, they are in here. But the rule to remember, the etiquette to remember when you go into the woods anywhere is you're going into someone else's home when you do that. You need to be a good house guest. You need to not tear stuff up. You need to not leave trash. You need to not disturb things that aren't yours. And if you can abide by those rules, you'll be just fine on wherever you're at. But too many people, I'll give you, for instance, it's kind of humorous. Near me is a national... recreation area. It's called the Chickasaw National Recreation Area. It's some real damn rough country back in there. And a few years ago, they had a guy out of Oklahoma City come down, and he was going to be a big, bad deer hunter. Had a GPS with him. And somehow, he got disoriented, probably because he had a snoop full of Jack Daniels in him, but he was... he got off the main road, got down into some canyons, and got lost, and couldn't get a cell number. And was deer hunting and got disoriented, lost, and the next thing you know, he's screaming for help and just absolutely having a horrible time. Well, they called a now deceased friend of mine named Nathan Sixkiller to go get him. Nate went in there. This guy was 30 yards from a major travel pathway, major highway, and did not hear the cars because he was so scared. But, you know, that's the deal. You got these guys with a shotgun in the back window, you know, being he-man, thumping their chest. They got to have their beer when they go do anything. And that type of behavior is not conducive to be a trained observer. You know, you're a cop, Kevin. You understand you got basic six rules or six questions on investigating any crime. You're going to ask who, what, when, where, why, and how.
Yeah.
You know, and the same thing applies to research when you're researching the paranormal or anything. You need to know who it is you're looking for, what it is you're looking for, when they did whatever they did, what they did whatever they did, where they did it, why they did it, and how they did it. And once you figure all these things out, and if you can figure them out, then it gives you a fairly good knowledge base to go ahead and get some in-depth look at stuff. You know,
well, look, let me ask a question about going into the woods. You know, when growing up, I spent a lot of time in southern Oklahoma, in kind of a wild and woolly area outside of Atoka. It's no longer wild and woolly. I've been back through there. It's a subdivision now. But it was wild and woolly when I was there. And just to give you and the audience a flavor of what I'm talking about, it was 6 miles from our farm on a gravel road, 6 miles to the highway, to the paved highway. And then once you arrive at the paved highway, you hang a left, and you're about 3 or 4 miles from town. Just, you know, we're 6 miles off of the nearest paved road. And it could get a little wild and woolly. But here's the question. Doing the kind of work that I have done, I know that there are times when I would be in a situation where I was there to get information. I'm an American. I don't look like I am anything but an American. And there was no use pretending I was something else other than American. So there was really no way for me to blend in. But the thing, the key to it, was not to try and blend in, but to make it so that everyone assumed I just didn't matter. Now, when you go into the forest, you go into this wild and woolly area, is that what you need to do if you're going to try and meet up with some Bigfoot? Do you need to just sort of go in with a posture and attitude that says, I'm unobtrusive, I don't matter? Or do you need to go in like you're in charge of things?
Well, the first thing you need to understand is they're going to know you're in their realm the minute you step foot in it. They don't have to have you announce it to them.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is you need to be inoffensive. And what I mean by that is, I don't advocate anybody going to the woods in Oklahoma without a firearm, but keep that thing where you can get to it easy, but keep it hidden. Because when you meet up with them, you don't want them knowing. And regardless of what a lot of people say, I don't know if these things can read your mind or not. I don't really care. All I know is that I've had good interaction, I've had bad interaction. It all depended normally on my attitude when I was dealing with them. One of the things I do is I take fruit with me, like take an apple, pears, whatever, take it in there, find a place in a glade or a clearing in the woods, and I'll find a place where I can leave it. And I'll sit down, and I'll go ahead and I'll cut that apple in half, and I'll put half of it on a log or a stump, and I'll take a bite out of the other and lay it down to show them that it's not going to poison them. And I'll sit for a little bit, and I'll whisper, I'll talk like I'm talking to a small child. I'll get up and I'll leave. And I come back over a period of several days, sometimes weeks. And invariably, what will happen is the first 2 times you leave something for them to consume, they won't do it. But by the 3rd time, when you've left a food item out for them to gather up, they'll gather it up. And after about a week of doing this, they start leaving you things in place of where the food was, like a piece of bark, a rock, a tin can, something shiny, you know. And it's like a barter system. And it does work. It's worked for a lot of people. And I do need to say this much. If it were just dealing with a Squatch, I wouldn't worry about packing a firearm. But one of the problems we've got in Oklahoma and Texas right now is we are the meth cooking capital of the United States. And all these idiots, they all decide that they invariably, sooner or later, they want to go into the woods someplace and build them some kind of a shelter, and that's where they're cooking their methamphetamine. And I've run across this many times, and there's been some close calls. So, you know, to get away from something like that, you have to really go deep into the woods. And I do have places to do that. But the human predators are the ones that I worry about the most.
Yeah. All right. Now, you said you've had some good interactions. Describe one of those for us, if you will. And we've got 3 minutes here till break. But tell us about a good interaction.
I can do it in 3 minutes. I had a researcher out of New Hampshire, of all places, come down to visit with me. And he's a totally delightful man. I'm not going to use the name because it's just not appropriate. But we went in, and he was bound and determined that in this one area that I go that's relatively peaceful, it's in a national park, we went in at night, no guns, and I never take guns in that park because it's illegal. But we went into the spring, sat down and everything, and we sat there and we talked, and I told him, I said, there's no need trying to be quiet because they know we're here. Well, I told him where to go up the trail and leave some food. He left some chips, some candy, some other things. Well, I'd never had this happen before, and I've had pebbles thrown at me. I've had sticks thrown at me, rocks, limbs. Well, this is the first time I'd ever had flowers thrown at us. Well, we were sitting in from behind a really large hedge-looking place, and my brother out there, he's been to the spring I'm talking about, but we had flowers and flower petals start raining down on us because this guy that was with me, he has a PhD in Germany. He's a total delightful guy. And we just got showered with all these flowers. It's the strangest thing I've ever had happen to me. But we could feel the emotion that this gentleman that was with me elicited in the Sasquatch in there, and they responded the best way they knew how. And it was really delightful. I mean, it was. I just wish I'd have had a camera with me to film it.
And now, did you see, with your eyes, did you see any Sasquatch that time?
This was like at 2 in the morning, and it was a moonless night, but we did see gold, green, blue, and white eyes shine behind the hedge, about 7-8 feet off the ground. There's no way it could have been animals. It was moving too fast, and they were you'd have to have been there. And in answer to a previous question, no, not all Sasquatch stink. Not all of them have an odor. I have access to other areas that are, you know, they're extremely gentle and playful. They prank. But my experience has been mostly the ones that are violent are not actually what you'd call a Sasquatch.
Now, what do you call them?
I call them werewolves, monsters, whatever you want to call them. The ones I've dealt with where I've gotten hurt were the ones that had a bit of a snout on them.
All right, we have a break coming up here in about 20 seconds, and when we come back, I want to dive off into this werewolf thing. Growing up down in with a lot of contact around Atoka, I have heard of the Mud Creek Monster. I've heard that story before. No, not that story, but I've heard about that before, and I've heard about these werewolves. But I want to dive off into that and get some detail. We'll be back more with Tuklo Nabosha right after this.
The very end of...
When all was done on the longest highest day. So many hearts were broken, lives taken away, left confused in disbelief. Who could be so cruel to cause this grief? What was meant to be an act to bring us down made us search within ourselves for what was lost and found. We are strong, we are free, we are anything we want to be. We are strong, we are free, and we're standing tall for all the world to see. Before the fire's final flame, in our hearts we knew we'd never be the same as angels climb towards heaven's light. The ground below slipped away, but their wings took flight. They have not gone in vain, and they their cause was just. Trading souls has inspired the rest of us. We are strong, we are free, we are anything we want to be. We are strong, we are free.
And we are back. My guest this evening is Tuklo Nebojsa. Tuklo, when we went away for break, I said I want to dive off into this thing about werewolves. Are you calling them that because only of their appearance? Or are you calling them that because of observations you've made about their behavior?
Well, a little bit of everything. Let me back up a little bit. Okay, in the Choctaw Nation, they refer to these things as Hatakopi, in other words, the man dog. The reason they call them the man dog is because they have a bit of a snout on front. It's not as pronounced as what you see in the movie Underworld, but it still is a snout, and they have very pronounced meat-tearing teeth when you see their teeth. They do have molars, they do have flat teeth in the front, but their canines are a lot larger. And they have very animalistic behavior. Without going into too much detail on two different locations, I'll tell you a couple of incidents about these things. One is I have a friend up in Tennessee named Jan Thomas, has a website called Traps, and she did an article up there about the monster in the land between the lakes. And you'd have to go to her website and read it, but it basically what it boils down to is one of these things killed an entire family and consumed part of them. They were in a camper, it pulled the door off, killed the mom and dad, and they found the five-year-old girl, the remains of her, up in a tree. The way she found out about this, she was actually working in a gas station when these two cops came in, and they were just absolutely washed out. And they slowly but surely gave her the story about it. Another anecdote is I know is true due to the source that I got it from. there's an area down Red River between Texas and Oklahoma down in South Central Park, and there was a family down there that used to go ahead and they would rob the people that would use the ferry to get across the river. And this family is still a prominent family in southern Oklahoma, and they do not like people talking about this episode of their history, and I won't give the name of the family out, but they're still prominent, a lot of lawyers in the family. But anyway, they had ancestors that would rob people, kill them, and leave them lay. Well, they had a problem that they got a hold of a Chickasaw chieftain's daughter, and she escaped. So what this chieftain did, he got a bunch of his warriors together, and they went and they grabbed the patriarch and two of his sons that were doing this mayhem and murder, and they staked them out down the river and left them for the man dog, the hot dog coffee, to get. Well, in that same area in 1997, there was a woman that, in this particular area, and I'm not going to give the location because it's one of the areas I go when I do film and stuff, and I really don't like interlopers. But this woman was having a little sexual tryst with a guy, and she was married, and it wasn't her husband. Well, they found her remains on the hood of her Buick Riviera, pulled back in a fetal position with a scream coming out of her mouth, only she was dead. I mean, you could see her face where she'd been screaming, and she'd been disemboweled, and the soft tissue organs had been carried off, and she had, like, entrails laying across the hood going out onto the ground where something had been, like, pulling her large intestine out or something. Well, the guy she was with, they never found. But the footprints going away from that area were human in appearance, but really abnormally large. There's not too many human beings that have a 23-inch footprint length. You know, and
23 inches.
I'm sorry, what?
23 inches
long, and it was 11 inches wide at the ball of the foot and 8 inches wide at the heel. The crush factor on the footprint went down 2 inches in hard-packed soil. And it wasn't sand, it was soil. But it was like the thing was stomping off, carrying a lot of weight. And the conjecture is, and I don't know, because I wasn't there when the case was being worked. All I've done is seen the reports on it and talked to a couple of deputy sheriffs that worked that case. But they called in a traffic accident investigator out of Oklahoma City rather than a forensic investigator. And the reason they did is they wanted somebody that could figure the weight of what it was that was walking off, and they figured it had to weigh at least 800 pounds. Well, nobody knew the exact weight of the guy that carried off, but if you figure roughly 200 pounds, that means whatever had come up and killed her and consumed part of her, weighed about 600 pounds. It had a 59-inch distance between footsteps. Now, that, I don't know if you've ever really tracked anybody, but that is a huge stride. 59 inches is a long. Average human being has about, at a leisure pace, is about 20-some-odd inches, depending on their height. And on a really fast clip, they'll be about a yard. Either a meter.
Well, 59 inches would put this thing at about 9 feet tall, wouldn't it?
Yes, sir. It sure would. That's the conclusion they came to. And I don't know any 9 foot tall men out there that weigh 600 pounds that are running around barefoot on Red River.
What are some of the local stories about this werewolf?
Well, most people don't call it a werewolf. Most people, if you can ever get them to really open up about this stuff, they just call it the monster in the woods, you know, or they'll call it the Mud Creek monster, or they'll call it this or that, you know, whatever they, Momo, getting into a lot of the tribal peoples. I'm really light complected. I speak the language fluently. But even that doesn't help when you're trying to interview a full-blood Chickasaw elder that he's back in the woods and he really doesn't want to talk to you. They're very private people. But I have gotten a hold of some ranchers in the area, and one of the things that that they've talked about in depth, there's this one guy south of where I live here that owns a 4,000 acre cattle ranch that my friend Lloyd Pye came out and actually took photographs of the fences on this place where something had just ripped these fences apart while carrying off livestock. This rancher absolutely in public will not admit that there's something like that stealing his livestock. But you get him in a cafe and you get him alone off the record, he's got some hair raising tales to tell about some of the things he's run into out there. But he's lost calves, he's found pieces of calves. He had a head from about a 4 month old calf one time thrown at him. He was on his back veranda to it. He's got basically a log cabin mansion is the best way I can describe it. It's a huge log house with a porch going all across the back of it with a hot tub. And he was back there with the little old gal while his wife was away on vacation, and they were doing the nasty in the hot tub, and all of a sudden something stood up just out of the light, and they could see that it was huge. It had red eyes. And it was growling at him, and the only thing he had to throw at it was his Coors beer bottle. The gal he was with was screaming. She was hysterical. And he was throwing beer bottles, apples, and everything else at it. And then he got her into the house, got his 30-30 out, and started sweeping the brush south of the house, or it's actually north of the house, with this rifle. Well, nothing else happened that night, but the next day, he found a whole bunch of his calves, like 11, 12 calves in this one paddock. They were all just destroyed. Nothing was eaten off of them. They were just crippled up and beat up. The following night, he was out there trying to ascertain what was going on. He had one of his adult sons with him. And about 1 o'clock in the morning, in another moonless night, all of a sudden something hit him in the gut so hard it knocked the wind out of him and knocked him back, and he broke his double glass paint, multi-pane glass doors in the back of his house. When he stood up and looked at the light shining down where it was hit him, it was one of these calves' head. You could see where it had been torn off and chunked at him, and the trunk at that far, it's about 30 yards to the tree line from this back porch. You'd have to be somebody strong as hell to knock a 300-pound man down with the head off of a calf. I mean, I'm not strong enough to throw something that far.
Have you seen this video? It's on YouTube, but it's a very strange creature that was killed in Saudi Arabia. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. I actually don't have a lot of time to be web surfing.
Well, this particular video, the story that goes with it is there was a shepherd, and he was out in a kind of a desert area. Even in deserts like we have right here in Phoenix, there are things that grow, and certainly sheep and goats can make a living in an area like Phoenix, and it was apparently an area similar to that in Saudi Arabia. And at a distance, he saw three. He thought it was three men, he couldn't tell what they were doing. It looked like they were having some kind of discussion, and so he started approaching to see who they were. Discovered it wasn't men, but three creatures he had never seen before, and they got into a fight. He pulled a gun and started shooting, and he killed one of them. Now, this creature, the video shows a close-up. And, the whole video is close-up. This creature has the head of, I'll just say it has a canine appearance. The body is, it doesn't look like the body of a dog. The forearms look like the forearms of a badger. Then it's got very long legs, and the feet are big feet. It looks like a cross between the feet of a dog and a human. We'll talk about that when we come back from this break. More with Tuklo Nashoba. We'll be right back.
she never heard of. Me and the boys, we got our lives on the line. We fight for freedom. Give me a gun and I'll eat them. Hear the battle cry, fight for your life. We fight for freedom. Our flag flying high, we'll beat them. With the moonlight, we'll fight through the night.
Welcome back. We are talking with Tuklo Nashoba, and we're talking with him about some of the very strange cryptid forms of life that inhabit the area of Oklahoma in the United States of America. Before we go back to him, let me just briefly say, I hope that you first understand that this is 4th of July here in the United States. Well, all over the world it's 4th of July, but that is a holiday here. It is our birthday as a nation. And the music that you've heard in these breaks has been from independent artists over at GarageBand.com, songs that have something to do with freedom or that have something to do with our national holiday, and I appreciate those artists at GarageBand.com for the excellent work that that they do producing all of this fabulous music. Each and every night, the music that you hear, at least 99% of the time, is from the independent artist at GarageBand.com. You want to go over there and check it out because there's some great music there. In fact, some of the best music that you can find anywhere being produced by these independent artists. All right, Tuklo, I gave a description before we went to break about this creature. Does that sound anything like what you have seen?
Not really. The best way I can... I don't know. There's a... Jan has a website, like I said, called Traps. If you look on there, there's a picture that a guy drew, and it's a, of a naked, tight, werewolf-type creature they're talking about. And other than the snout, it's pretty much close to what I've come across. But like I said, I've come across a lot of different stuff. The thing people need to understand is very rare to get a daylight sighting of anything. If they're really going to do some in-depth research, they need to do it at night. You can find tracks, you can find footprints, duplex or cast, stick formations, all that in the daytime, and occasionally get a daylight sighting. But to really get connected with the things that go bump in the night, you need to be going out in the night to bump with them,
I understand. So, all right, let's go back to the telephone. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Oh, this is Mickey in Atlanta.
Yes, Mickey.
Kevin, several months ago, you had on a guest, and he was talking about he had a brother that lived in Oklahoma.
That's correct.
Talking about, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he was talking about, the various Sasquatch and other types of creatures that they had seen in the forest, National Forest in Oklahoma. And then you mentioned that town that you knew about whenever.
Yeah, Atoka.
And is this the same area? And does your guest tonight know this person that was on previously or his brother? I'll hang up and take your answer.
Okay, well, I'll give you the answer. The answer is, this is the brother that we're talking with tonight. The person who was talking about that told us some of the same stories, but from his perspective of having been there and seen what we're hearing about tonight. This is his brother. The person that you were listening to, the previous guest, is John. He is a producer for this show. And this is his brother, Tucklow. And you mentioned your brother being with you, Tucklow, and seeing some of this. What do you think about this... we're talking about this werewolf thing. Is it in any way... How tall is this?
I'm sorry, you're going to have to repeat that. I was coughing.
How tall is this creature? The werewolf.
I've seen the same one numerous times, and I actually got a photograph of it. I've just got to get my publisher, Dallas, to find it and send it to me. It's very blurry, but you got to understand the circumstances I described.
But how tall is it?
Probably about 10 foot.
Okay, so it's a big creature.
Big creature. Huge.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phone line. This will be our final call for the evening. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Don Poplar, Phoenix.
Yeah, Don.
Hi. I just was listening, and you mentioned this was the brother of the guy you had on before.
That is correct.
Sent you the pictures?
That is correct.
God, I don't want to miss this opportunity. Can you ask him to get permission to publish those pictures?
All right, we'll do that.
And maybe I would love to be able to publish them on my website.
Okay, well, I will ask him. And thank you for the call, Don. We're almost out of time, and I would keep you online, but we're just about out of time. Tucklow, John sent me some pictures of Bigfoot, and I don't know, I guess I need to send them to you. He got your permission to send them to me, so you may know which ones we're talking about. But they were good close-up photographs. And what Don wants to know is if I can have permission to post those, and if not, I need to know that. If I do have permission, he wants to put them on his website as well.
I don't know which pictures you're talking about.
Okay.
Is it the dead one laying down in the case?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that. Those belong to a very good friend of mine, a guy that I love like a brother named Cliff Jones. But he had a Friends of Bigfoot.org, and I'm sure Cliff wouldn't mind somebody putting them on his
okay.
website. He said.
All right, we'll get in touch with him to make sure.
Yeah, and, I can do that for you.
All right. Like everything else, there are parts of the audience that are absolutely fascinated by the topic of Bigfoot. parts of the audience that are absolutely fascinated by UFOs. Is there a connection?
In my opinion, yes.
Now, why do you have that opinion?
That would be a whole nother show, son. It's just some research I did.
Are these extraterrestrial?
Some are, some aren't. That's the best way I can describe it. The thing most people don't understand is Michio Kaku, he's a physicist, will be the first to tell you that there are other dimensions. And I'm not into all the woo-woo stuff, you know, but the thing is, the guy's a physicist. He's very well educated. I have other friends and colleagues I deal with that are of the like education, and most physicists do believe now that there are dimensional portals, whether you want to call them wormholes, strings, whatever you want to, you know, the string theory. But there's more out there than we know about. There's more than the average person. The average person's content to go home, sit down, drink the beer, watch TV, and let everybody else take care of all the weird stuff. But if you want to get into some of the research I did, I can come back sometime and we can discuss that. And I'll see if I can dig up some old photos and old sound files and stuff like that that you could play on the air, and that would be kind of fun.
All right, so, but from your point of view, some of these Bigfoot are extraterrestrial.
Yes, sir.
Are some of them the result of genetic experimentation?
Yes, sir.
Do they look the same? Do they look the same?
No, they don't. That's the trick right there. The extraterrestrial version that I believe are extraterrestrial, I wouldn't bet my life on it, but I've had enough experience that I do believe that. I think that Lucas actually based Chewbacca on something somebody had told him. You know?
Well, now the photograph that we were talking about sort of looks like Chewbacca. It really does.
The one.
I wish we had more time. We're out of time, and the music's taking over. All right, folks, that's it for this show. That's it for this week. And I hope you'll join me on Monday when we kick this off again. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. And one more time, let me say happy birthday, America. Until next time, so long, everybody.